Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to Startup Club. Some of your faces I just saw in class. Nice. Got some overachievers, my favorite kind of people. Well, let's do a quick, yeah, two hats, exactly. If you knew how many hats I have, you'd wonder where I store all the hats. let's start with a quick warm-up. Get the body engaged, come back to presence. And I know you've heard me say it before, we'll say it again. This is one of the most important things you can do to kick off any coaching session. And you can kind of explore to do this with your kids and partner. You know, if you're about to do something really romantic, what would it be like to drop in with your partner first? Think about that. All right, so go ahead and stand up for a second and stretch one side at a time. You know the routine by now, I'm sure. See if you can stretch all of one side while arching your back. You know, we're hunched over computers all day, most of the time. And switch sides to get all of the other side stretched out. And then slowly bring your arms down while pushing them back. Get that chest stretch in. Now, twist around both sides for a few seconds without moving your feet. Switch if you haven't. Now bend down and reach your toes for a few seconds. All right. Now, with your eyes closed, gently roll your head around a few times each direction. Defocus your eyes while you do it. Switch directions. Now, do a little tiny bunny hop. The idea is that you're about an inch or two off the ground. Little tiny hops. Not jumps, but hops. You're just trying to get your body to shake up a bit. Okay. I know it seems silly, but believe it or not, all of these have research behind them, even if they're a little ridiculous. Okay, let me mute everyone up here, getting a little sound. All right. So, last thing here, we'll do a quick meditation, real quick. So go ahead and go back inward. You can do this with your eyes closed or partially open, but the idea is you're not focused on a screen or something bright. And I want you to explore for a second one question and just contemplate whatever comes up without judgment, without making anything wrong or trying to change. Just simply allow your mind to reflect. We're going to practice contemplation, something that's kind of a lost art in this day and age. And contemplation simply means to think of something. That's it. But you're only thinking of this, nothing else. What brings you here right now to this class? Why are you here? Just contemplate, no judgment. Why am I in this class right now? And as a thought comes, don't simmer with it. Just allow a new thought to come. The thoughts can come and go, but no one's stopping for tea. And if nothing comes up, that's okay too. Why are you in this class right now? Right here, in this present moment. And whenever you're ready, gently open your eyes. And welcome back to presence. One of the most powerful things we as human beings can do, because we're one of the most distracted species on the planet, is come back to presence. So today, Speaking of presence, we're going to talk about initiation. One of the most common problems a coach runs into, especially brand new coaches, isn't not knowing a tool set. It isn't not having all the experience and education. A lot of you already have that. In fact, a lot of you have such a vast and powerful life experience that you could help people with a multitude of things. The big thing that most people get stuck on is being stuck, especially around starting a new habit or routine, such as working on your business, working on your marketing, creating content. Now, quick show of hands, who right now is feeling stuck around one of these things I just said? Is anybody feeling stuck on those things? Just about 80% or so, maybe 90%? Okay, thanks for your honesty. So today, this class is for you. Now, if you were on Anand's call 2-3 weeks ago, something like that, he focused on the inner game. So this is a little bit more of that vein, but I'm all about the practical realm. That's just how I am. Things that I can do with my hands and in reality really make sense to me. Really meta stuff, high level cognitive stuff, I just leave that to Evan. But here, I'm all about the today tactical strategic things. And I want to talk to you about a little bit of a mindset shift of how you can look at initiation, you know, starting something new, to initiate something, to begin anew. And some simple little things you can add to what you're trying to do to make it a bit easier, to pull off the pressure, to pull off the pain you might feel as you try to start something new. Now, the first thing I want to say is, whenever someone is stuck, you right now with this situation you're talking about, or your clients, or anybody at all, it's normally because we're stuck between one foot on the gas pedal and one foot on the brake. And anyone that was in Annie's class just heard her talk about this, but I wanted to sprinkle it in because she put it so well. When you are 10% consciously trying to do something, but 90% unconsciously saying, no, I can't do it, or it's not time, or I'm not ready, well, then you can only go 10%. 10% is not a lot, right? 10% is a little bit. And the big reason this happens is because there's some kind of internal struggle, usually an emotional block or challenge or a self-limiting belief. Now, we could go straight into the grass, the deep neck woods here and talk about parts work, because usually this means there's a part inside of you that just simply isn't ready. You know, it needs to be spoken to. It needs to be aware. It needs to be heard rather than suppressed and made wrong. Many of us might call this the inner critic, something like that, comes in and it says, you can't do that. Oh, it's not worth it. This, no one's ever watching this content. There's no point. You know, we all have heard that voice, right? Well, the point of that voice isn't to tear you down. The point is similar to thinking of it as you are a corporation. We'll call it You Inc. or Me Inc. And part of Me Inc. is a board members. The board members have to meet. They have to talk about things. And just like any company with a board, you can't be the CEO and ignore your entire board all the time. And in fact, if you ignore a single board member over and over again, that person's going to raise hell. And in fact, they might quit eventually, which might leave a hole now where something was valuable there before. Now there's nothing. And whenever we're not listening to what's behind the harsher message, I'm not ready, this will never work, behind that is actually a part of you trying to help. But because it's never listened to, it tries to get harsher or meaner or somehow more loud, right? It wants to be heard. And that can tend to be kind of ugly if you let it go on long enough without being heard. So part of the battle is listening to that voice, because it's trying to teach you something. It's trying to show you something. But if you're busy trying to suppress it, make it wrong, push it away, it can't be heard. It's not being heard. Now it's upset. It's angry with you. You maybe heard this old Native American story about you, inside of each of us, there's a light wolf and a dark wolf. And if you only feed the light wolf, well, then the dark wolf won't come out. Well, I disagree, actually. I think that inside of all of us, there's a light wolf and a dark wolf. And if you don't feed either of them, they start to behave like a rabid animal. They're starving. And if you've ever seen a starving animal, this is when you hear about, you know, bears attacking people. Because normally bears are pretty scared of people. We're loud, we're noisy, we don't smell like nature. We smell like something different. But when they're starving, all of that goes away, and then they might attack you. The same thing is true here inside. When you're not giving attention to the part of you that's critical, or that maybe isn't critical, maybe the part of you that needs to share love and appreciation for what you've done. You know, there's so many parts here. Those parts, whichever one's being ignored, it's going to become rabid. And it might even take over, because it's the only way it knows how to be heard. So part of the battle is listening to the multiple parts within us, which we're all composed of a multitude of parts. Anyone that's curious about this, you can look up internal family systems on Google. You can really break it down into four. There's the top dog, which is usually the inner critic. You're like, oh, that's not good enough, that sort of thing. Then there's the inner parent, the part of you that wants to nurture and make things better. Then there's bottom dog. And the bottom dog is the one who says, well, I'm not any good at this. This will never work. Oh, I suck. That kind of voice. And then the last, and this is Gestalt therapy approach. There's a few approaches to this. And then lastly, there's the higher self. This is kind of like the part of you who's always been there, knows the truth, and can see past petty squabbles and fights. It doesn't live in the triggered emotional realm. It just simply witnesses neutrally. If you're meditating a lot, you probably are more familiar with this, the observer, you know, who's witnessing, who's seeing all of this. Now, part of our work when we initiate something is bringing balance between these four parts. At one part, you might have the woe is me bottom dog. Oh gosh, I can't do this. And another part might be the top dog. This isn't good enough. No one's going to watch this video. And you want to open a dialogue between these parts. So I'm going to share with you a simple tool to demonstrate how to do this. But to do so, I need a volunteer. So who is someone who's struggling right now initiating and would like to play with me? Aaron, you're the first hand I saw come up. So I'm just going to ask you to unmute here. Hold on a second. I'm going to spotlight you as well. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, Warren. Wow, this is my first call. Can't believe it. Whoa, baptism by fire.
Yeah, getting right into it. Well, even more so, thank you for playing with me. This will be like a laser mini coaching session. So I won't be able to go as in depth as I normally would if I had an hour with you. So just know if I'm kind of short and things like that, that's why.
Great.
So where are you stuck first? Give me a little context.
I feel like every area of my life.
Okay.
I signed up for this, January or something? And this is the first time I've come here. So I'm stuck in my career. That the main thing that is worrisome is career making money.
Okay. And is what specifically are you stuck around initiating here? Is there anything where you can't start or you're not having an easy time getting started?
Creating an online course. I keep starting and starting and starting. I'm in that loop.
Okay. So what's the course about? Just a little detail here.
It's about nutritional cooking, making it really joyful, simplifying it. So I have a background in culinary arts and nutrition therapy.
Oh, cool. You have an awesome hybrid of skills. I love hearing that. So I'm going to walk you through this process. We're just going to talk about this task. Well, let me ask one more question here. Is this on a scale of 0 to 10, 0 meaning no charge at all, and 10 means it's the most difficult thing in the world, I can barely stand it. Where are you at with this right now?
The stuckness, you mean?
Yeah. Like, is it triggering for you and you get really angry when you talk about it or anything like that?
Yeah. Let's see. I would say it's at a 7.
Okay. Got it. We should be able to work with that. I want you to go ahead and go inside. And what I'm doing here is, you know, facilitate it, but you can do this with yourself. I do this to myself quite often, actually. You're opening up the communication.
Tissue.
Yeah. And at first, I want you to get in touch. Here, I'm actually going to open a notepad here. Give me 1 second. All right, I'm just taking notes. So you might actually hear me type. I apologize for that. I haven't found a way around that sound yet. But tell me, can you get in touch with the part of you that feels stuck, that maybe doesn't believe in you, or maybe it doesn't think this is possible?
Like where it is in my body?
Yeah, physically, sensations.
Gosh, it feels all over right now.
Is there anywhere really, it's okay if it's all over, but does it stick out in anywhere in particular, or?
I think my throat and my head.
And describe to me what it feels like in your throat and head when you really focus on this part.
I mean, I already feel like I need to clear my throat. It feels inflamed. It feels blocked. Like there's a something blocking it.
Gotcha. And could you name this part, whatever you want to? Just don't name it something where you're like making fun of it or putting it down. Oh, yeah. Like the crappy part.
Blockhead just came to mind.
Blockhead. So, okay. Yeah. We can work with that, unless you want to change it to something a little more gentle.
We'll call it B. How about that?
B it is. As long as it's something that when you say it, it doesn't feel insulted. That's the key here.
Okay.
And now I want you to get in touch with the part of you that wants to make this course, the nutritional cooking course. And it really feels like it's important and it feels driven, passion, those kind of things. Can you get in touch with that part physically in your body?
Ooh, that's slippery. It's funny. That got that part scurried. I think it's in my heart, but it's kind of scurrying to the back. I don't know why. I think there are other parts that are trying to veil it or cover it. That's weird. It was really slippery.
So it's slippery. Does it have a heat or a pain to it, or does it feel good? Is there an energy to it?
You know, there's, yeah, you know what? I think it's excitement. There is an energy, but I think I'm confusing it with anxiety rather than excitement.
Mm.
Because there is, it's kind of like that exhilaration, you know, when you're whatever, with a something that kind of scares you, but you're also excited about that. Kind of that feeling.
And what do you want to call this part?
Whew. E.
We can work with that for sure. So now I'll give you a little context first and then we'll dive in. I'm going to ask you to keep your eyes closed for the whole part, or at least partially closed if you can. The idea is that you're focusing on these parts and visualizing them, not, you know, something outside of what's happening right now. And I'm going to ask a few questions. So when I do it, I'm going to ask you to switch between the parts. And when I say switch, I don't mean mentally only. I mean physically. The very first thing you should do is focus on the physical sensations of where each part exists. So if B is in your throat and your head, feel that need to clear your throat, that your throat, your head. And then when you switch to E, go back to that in your heart, even if it is slippery and moving. That's what I mean when I say switch.
Got it.
So first, I want E to open up the dialogue, if you can, and just say out loud for us all to hear. Have E say something to B so that B knows it's okay to talk.
B, I am open and I'd love to talk with you. I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Now, physically switch to B. See if B is willing to talk.
Not yet.
Okay. Have E ask, and literally ask in your own words, what is something I could do to help you feel at ease?
And you want me to say this out loud?
Mm-hmm.
B, what is something I can do to make you feel at ease and feel heard? I'd really like to hear you. I'd like to understand you.
Now switch back to B and allow B to respond if they want to.
Okay, I'm curious.
Now switch back to E and have E say something like, what is getting in the way of us working on this nutritional cooking course? What do you think?
So B, I get the feeling you're trying to tell me something that's getting in the way here, and I really want to hear that because I value you. So what is it that you don't want me to move forward with this course?
Now switch, making sure you feel her in your throat and your head first.
Just feels like so much, and I'm worried that I'm trying to protect you. I'm worried you're gonna get burned out again.
Now switch back to E. And like a good parent would, a good regulated, resourced, and grounded parent, not being reactive, just like a caring parent, validate what B just said and address it.
Okay, B, I hear that. And I really value that because none of us wants to get burned out. So thank you for that. Whew. So let's figure out together how we don't get burned out moving forward with this.
And then ask B what B thinks you could do.
What do you think would be something we can do to make sure we stay balanced?
Then switch.
That's the word, balance. I need fresh air. I need you not to work all the time. I need play. I need fun. I need rest. I need creativity. And, you know, it can't be just work.
Coming back to E again, validate and see if you can help that happen.
Well, first, B, that soothes my soul to hear you say that, because I definitely want that. So, how about this? How about if we incorporate that into the course? Because I think you're not the only one here. I think everybody needs balance. It's so vital right now. So maybe you could be the VP of balance and help me. Let's do it differently this time. Let's do it differently.
And now, before you switch, think of when you might visit B again. Something you can actually commit to, like a good parent would. A good parent would not make a commitment and then not show up. That would be a bad parent move. What is something you can commit to revisiting B about this? Could be once, could be regularly, every day, every week, whatever you want.
It's going to be regularly.
How often? And tell this to B out loud, like a conversation.
I was going to say every time I sit in this chair, but then there was this thing that came up about, wait a minute, I don't want to sit in this chair. I want to be outside. I want to go play. So there's a little conflict here. Okay, B, I need your help on this because we need to make a living. I'm definitely trying to protect you by not going and getting a job and, you know, eating up all, getting burned out that way. So part of this endeavor is to make sure we don't just work all the time. And I do need to sit my butt in this chair and do some creation. So we can't just play all the time. So I need your help in how to make this more playful and fun. I do commit to, how about this for a start? I want to check in with you every time I do sit down and see how, get your input on how we can make this work even a little more fun and playful and balanced for you. For all of us.
Now check in with B if that's agreeable.
I'm okay with that. I appreciate the consideration. And just know that I'm going to be writing you.
One last step here. I want you to wrap your arms around yourself as if you're hugging yourself physically, literally do it. But in your mind, imagine these two parts, whatever they look like. They could be an older or younger version of you. It could be another being completely. They could be animals. But imagine those two parts hugging each other just for a moment. Can you see them? And just feel whatever that feels like.
Super sweet.
And whenever you're ready, gently open your eyes.
Thanks, Warren.
Yeah. Now I'm going to ask you a weird question just to get you back in your body. If you were an inanimate object, what inanimate object would you be?
Mug. This mug here.
a little bit of silliness is a great way to just come back to right now, right here, you know, out of the emotional work, because otherwise sometimes it can come with us.
Oh.
Which would be okay right now because you seem very lovey-dovey, but if it was sad, you may not want to carry that with you.
Got it. Neat.
And just notice what we did in about 15 minutes there.
Okay.
Will you follow through with this and meet up with B again?
Absolutely.
Great. Thanks for playing with me, Aaron, especially on your first time here.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. Thanks. Thanks, Mark.
Appreciate you.
I appreciate you too. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, everybody. I'm going to remove the spotlights here for a second. Hold on a second. Sometimes when I, there we go. Since I use this camera, it's pretty demanding on my system. And sometimes it like freezes up. All right, everybody. So you can see what we got done in a pretty short amount of time there. Now, once you've done this 2, 3, 4, 5 times, you can easily do this in 2 to 5 minutes. It is much faster. But just like everything in the world, it takes practice. There's very few things in the world other than breathing and drinking water and eating and sleeping that take no practice at all. In fact, if you look at a newborn baby, though, some of those things they still struggle with. And I can remember my little kids not sleeping very well. So my point is practice. Do this a few times if you can. It doesn't have to be daily, although I invite you to look at adding this to your morning routine. If you check in with yourself, you'd be surprised how much inner wisdom is there. Because notice, all I did in this conversation with her is ask questions. And there are questions that she probably could have came up with on her own too. It's just a little guided, a little easier, but it's just a back and forth dialogue between the part of you that is like the parent or the higher self. Or you could even think of this as you, as who you are, the part of you that knows you have a purpose and that you're here to do something. And the part that's struggling, or the part that's being critical, or the part that's angry. And they just talk back and forth. The main piece here is you can't just shift mentally, you have to shift physically too. You know, The Body Keeps the Score, great book, but trauma, emotions, things like that, they're in the body. They're in the head too, but mostly they're in your body, which is why it's important to switch physically as well as mentally. So if you're feeling stuck around, you know, making your content, putting out marketing, or doing any of that, first, before you can get the outer game to work, and the outer game's writing the copy or making your video or doing the thing that's external, if you're struggling at all, that usually means something inside's got to get worked with first. 9 out of 10 times, this tends to be true. It's rarely the client doesn't understand or you don't understand how to make the content or how to make copy. That's sometimes it, you know, once in a while that gets in the way. But usually if that's the only thing in the way, you'll just research it and figure it out. And then it's not a problem anymore. If you're still stuck past that point, there's an emotional block somewhere. Now, normally we have more time for Q&A, so I'll stay a little bit late here. I just wanted to show you a little bit of parts work here because it's one of the most powerful tool sets I've ever learned, and you can do it with yourself. The only thing I would advise against is if you have big T trauma, really bad things like sexual trauma, you know, or you were abused as a child in some way, those kind of big things, if you start your day off and you've not done the work in those areas, it will probably trigger you for a good chunk of your day. So my rule of thumb is keep it to things that are about 7 or lower. If it's an 8, 9, or 10, then you probably just need to ground yourself. And it's probably a little risky to go to that big T trauma when you're just trying to start your day. So be careful with yourself. You know, things that belong in a therapist's office tend to be best in a therapist's office. But if it's not big T trauma, if it's just a little thing like I can't make this content because I just don't want to, or I feel resistance to doing it, or I don't want to work on marketing because marketing's boring, or whatever the story or narrative is, that kind of stuff can easily be resolved by yourself in a room with some silence. Now, I want to open up the group here to any kinds of questions. You can ask me about what just happened there, if some of that didn't make sense. I would ask though that we try and go back to the whole startup vibe, you know, starting your business, your marketing, your copy, your websites, things like that. But I'm happy to answer questions about that too. All right. So I'm just going in the order that I saw the questions here. Would you share the struggle with the inner work, or is that counterproductive? I'm not sure, Matthias, if you're asking that to me, if maybe you asked that to Aaron here who just talked. The struggle with the inner work, meaning, Matthias, can you just say more there? I don't want to answer it and then be answering the wrong question. Can you just say it a different way for me? All right. Amit saying, I have sent around 6 email campaigns that a certain percentage of my list has opened. Good. And I've tried to be as nurturing as possible. I'll try and give some of my most tangible techniques that I've known at the time. I want to try and do a webinar now and see what kind of engagement I get. I've done about 40 practice coaching sessions. Nice. I mean, you're on a roll. And whoever I can, and I feel that I can explain my content clearly. But I still haven't gotten to the point where any of my practice coaching clients are saying, how can I learn more? Which might be a mixture of you picking the wrong people to practice with, meaning this isn't actually that big of a deal to them. So they're not, it's not high on their list of priorities, or you're still figuring out who resonates with your messaging, or both. Let's see here, back to this here. I've just been getting the, that's really great stuff. People are really trying to like that or going to like that. Do you think I should practice creating an offer with more practice coaching sessions, or should I just offer a webinar to my list and see what happens? Both. I would do both. I think that one, you need to see what it's like to create a webinar. And frankly, it's not that hard. It probably sounds a lot harder than it is. But in reality, what you're doing in a webinar is you're showcasing your skill set. You're talking about what people will get for whatever they sign up with. So if it's a program, what do they get in the program? If it's a 90-day coaching package, what will you walk them through? What results will they get? What are the names of the tools and techniques you will use? You give the what for free and you sell the how. So I might say something like, well, I will use parts work to work through, you know, any kind of blocks so that you can create your content and you can work on your marketing. In fact, you'll do it so easily that it's just part of your life. And then you'll have clients rolling in, you'll have money coming in, and you'll have that big dollar sign, you know, $100,000 a year, $200,000 a year lifestyle. And I'm not going to talk too much about, you know, the intricate details of how parts work works or how many sessions you'll get and what we'll do in each session. I'm just basically talking about my overall technique, my system. Now, the other reason you want to keep doing both of these here is you want to keep practicing, because most likely your first few webinars won't sign anybody up because you don't know how to do a webinar yet. You know, you have to master the pitch. You have to master the art of describing what you do in front of a group of 10, 20, 30, 100 people, which is very different from one-to-one. The techniques and tools you would use to sell to a group are similar, but not exactly the same as you would use on a one-on-one call. They can be very different. So just keep that in mind. So you want to keep practicing. You don't want to let those skills get rusty. And you want to start practicing your webinars, which it sounds like you're at the point where it's time to do a webinar for sure. And I hope you're running paid ads too here or something to bring more people in, more leads to your list. But yeah, both of those would make sense to me. So keep going. How do you call the technique applied to Aaron? So it's got many names. The most common nomenclature would be parts work. That's kind of like slang, if you will. The original name was Internal Family Systems, IFS, Internal Family Systems. So you can Google that. You can find a whole bunch of information. It was originally for therapy. Now, I learned from a therapist who turned into a coach, and he predominantly practiced Gestalt therapy. And within Gestalt is a lot of parts work. In fact, I would say it's one of the biggest pieces of what makes Gestalt so effective. Same thing with NLP, actually, neuro-linguistic programming. Parts work is in a lot of different areas. Now, when you're learning about it, you might have to hunt around a bit if this is something you really want to do. There's $500, $1,000 courses out there. Very worth your time and investment to check it out. Or you can find books about it too. But some of those programs are aimed at therapists only, so you'd have to be a certified therapist. You can completely use this as a coach. There's no such thing as a tool set that only a therapist can use. in my opinion, it's not the tool set that is a therapist only, it's the content. As a coach, unless you're a certified therapist or have specialized training, you want to stay away from that big T trauma. Little T trauma is okay. You know, if you got someone got picked on by bullies as a kid and they can function as an adult, they have a functional life, they're not dealing with psychosis or schizophrenia, or they can't function, they can't keep a job down, their life's falling apart. That kind of stuff is for a therapist. But if someone bullied them and it just makes them not feel very good about themselves and something like a perspective shift is needed, you can completely use that tool set or other tool sets to help. So yeah, IFS, internal family systems. And I don't think there's other names for it, but it's a part of many modalities. I notice when I do voice dialogue with my clients, they struggle with feeling anything anywhere in the body. They resist when I ask about color or shapes. So different people are gonna have different blocks here. Some of the more masculine or egocentric types, like myself, we can tend to think about only ourselves, and we don't tend to think about emotions. It took me 3 years of literal daily practice to figure out, oh, I have a range of emotions, and in within each emotion is a range of how intense it is. When you're doing parts work or voice work, as voice dialogue as Tree's calling it here, you want to try different things. So if it's just you and them and they're not having that come up, you might see experiment a little bit. You know, if it's this doesn't work back and forth, what about chair work? You know, them talking to a representation of whatever's bothering them, a chair or a pillow or a teddy bear. You want to find and tweak it and look around for ways that get around the block. Now, if I was working with someone who had that, which I've done that a lot, actually, I'm always on the hunt for where they're incongruent. So even though they say they don't feel anything there, but they're obviously upset. Like when someone says I'm fine and they're obviously angry or sad or just anxious, call it out. I'm hearing that you're saying you're fine, but I'm noticing you're twitching, you're moving a lot. You know, you're kind of nervously shuffling back and forth, or, you know, whatever you notice. You know, it seems like your eyes are watery, or I saw a tear come down. Tell me more about that. You want to be on the hunt for incongruencies where they say one thing with their emotions, but in reality, it's something else. It's safe to assume that most of the time, most of your clients don't know what they're feeling. And if they do know what they're feeling, they don't know how to feel it in a way that's beneficial or healthy. They just have an emotion and it tends to take over, or they suppress it and put it away for later, but then they don't come back to it. So if you have that assumption, it's also easy to assume when they say there's nothing going on, that there probably is. That doesn't mean make them wrong or shame them. Just tune into those moments and invite them to look at it a little bit deeper. Now, that said, if someone's a really heady client and session after session after session, emotions just don't come up, keep hunting for those moments and work with the tool set they're offering you. So if they have a powerful mind, use the powerful mind. One of my favorite techniques for that is, okay, so let's say you're a detective right now. You're Detective Sherlock Holmes or whatever their name is, Detective Your Name. And you've been assigned this problem, whatever your client's dealing with. What would you do? What would you do to first find clues about how to work with this? What would you do? And then once you had enough data, and the next question would be naturally, what do you think as a detective you would do to try and solve the case? And you might ask a variation of questions around that. So just because someone's not using or tapping into their emotions, still try and look for it, but use what they have, which may not be emotional. When you're going through a rough time in your life, would you share that so people can relate? Would I share my inner conflict? I think that's what you were asking, right? The struggle with the inner work. Yes. So personally, I have different people for different things in my life. And I am that person for certain people and not for others. And I recognize that. We all have skill sets and we all have people who do or do not see those skill sets. And this is reality. You can't avoid it. So for me, I have certain people that I trust to go to, and it's a mutual relationship. It's not like I'm just dumping on them all the time. But when I have something that's an inner struggle, I have specific people that I know love and care about me, and they want to see me succeed. Not yes men or women, not people who are just going to say, oh, I'm sorry, life sucks. Nothing like that. I'm not interested in that. I'm looking for the kind of person who will risk the relationship, our friendship, to say the truth to me. And in fact, I don't tend to keep friends very long when they can't do that. They tend to become acquaintances. So for me, I will find whoever that person or persons are, and I will talk to them about it. You know, I have this struggle with trying to make my content. And every day I sit at the computer in front of the camera and I think about it, but then I don't do it. I don't get it. And for me, sharing something, I'm having a struggle. And I wonder if you could help me with it. So ask for context, get consent first. Don't just dump on someone. Consent is so important here. And then tap into them. Not only that, I will also talk about this in my sessions with clients, but from a place of having already solved it or gotten a lot of progress into it. I don't share things that I'm currently stuck with my clients, because that can create a dynamic of, you know, need to support me. The natural tendency of people is to follow the social contract. And the social contract says, even though you're paying me, that if I do something good for you or nice for you, you have to do it too. But we don't want our clients to do that. That's not coaching anymore. That's something else. So you want to keep that clean cut boundary around, you paid for this, I'm here for you. And if you would like me to help, I'm here to help. But not, I have a problem, I need you, client, to help it for me. So again, I will, even if I know I have something I'm still dealing with and I could relate to them, but I'm not over it yet, I'm still stuck, I'm not going to bring it up. It does not become a point of them supporting me. It becomes a point of role modeling or a lesson, you know, or illustrating something through my own experience. Great question today. Can you write the technique name to check it in Google? Internal family systems. Pretty simple. I'll type it out here. Internal family systems. There you go. Or parts work. Both will probably come up again and again and again. Is the parts integration you just shared with Aaron also an opportunity to provide written questions for my client to ponder and consider over the following week in private and on her terms? When I'm doing a deep dive with someone using parts work, I personally do take notes, because I know deep down that they're going to have deeper wisdom than anything I could ever provide, period. And my job is not to provide the answer. My job is to help them remove the blocks between them and their own answer. So I'm taking very clear, concise notes on key words and phrases, not every single exchange. For example, actually, let me share what I got from the session with Aaron there. So it's just this section here. Now notice she talked back and forth several times, over and over and over again. But all I wrote down were the things I needed to know. I needed to know the names, where they're located, the description of them, and what they each wanted and needed, and what the solution was. So I left out anything that really wasn't as important to that. I'll do the same thing with a client. You know, I'm looking and hunting for those moments where it's deep wisdom or really beneficial. And for me, that shows up as an intuitive hit. My body goes, oh, and I listen to that, huh, and I write it down or type it. Or things that are just plain obvious, you know, like, oh, they came up with a plan, I should probably write this down. And then when I'm done, I'll share those notes with them and say, hey, just so you know, this is what you said, and this particular thing stood out to me. So had I had a full session with Aaron, I would say something like, you know, it really stood out to me when B said, I need fresh air, not to work all the time, play, fun, rest, creativity. And it can't be just work. It's about balance. Using her exact words is way more powerful than me coming up with my own translation and offering it to her. Because again, this is deep hidden wisdom that was inside of her. I didn't put it there. It was already there. So I just need to reflect it to her so she can become more aware of it. And totally, often I will have someone do that. Normally, when someone comes up with a solution, they're just going to do it. You know, usually there's that aha moment. It's usually a surprise to both people. And then when they have that aha, they feel it in their body and they want to follow through. And then to hold them accountable, I'll ask them, when will you do that? And will you do that? And if it's a really wiggly client who like squirms out of accountability and says they're going to do it and sometimes doesn't, I will literally create a calendar event on my calendar, invite them to it. And I'll say, okay, at this time, on this date, I'm going to check in with you. And if you didn't do it, we're going to have a conversation. Can you agree to that? And then I'll really hold them accountable. When I do that, it is incredibly rare that someone doesn't do it. So that's like my backup tool for when people have fell out of integrity several times. How deep is the what that you put in a webinar? Cindy, I'm not exactly sure you're asking, to be honest. How deep is the what? Did I say something like that? Deep? Unfortunately, I lost the context there. Help me out if you can. Joanna's saying, I have two Facebook groups, same niche. First group is a financial freedom group for women. Then I niched further down to financial freedom for South African nurses. We've talked before. Any tips how to handle both groups, or should I close my first group and focus on my other group? Only you can answer this, for starters. You know, the answer is truly within. And my personal opinion is, I am far better at doing one thing than I am at doing two things. And I would say that unless there's some kind of, like if you have hundreds of people in both groups, well then obviously it wouldn't really make sense to close one down. I might put way more attention on one of those groups, whichever one sings to my soul, whichever one makes me feel alive, whichever one, when I get in there, I feel more excited, more alive than the other one. That's the one I would focus on. And if you don't have that, maybe it's just a handful of people, or maybe you have 100 people, but no one engages. No one's talking. Then I would definitely double down on whatever feels like your higher purpose. In life, it's a constant struggle. In fact, this is the blessing and curse of being someone who is, someone who really wants to make something of themselves, someone who wants to make big things, ambitious. It's a curse and a blessing, ambition is. And this is part of the battle. It's the constant struggle of looking at, am I still on path? Am I still on path? And then often, especially for those of us that have the influx of constant new thoughts that won't stop, I don't know if that's you, Joanna, but that's me. But for those of us who struggle with something like that, there's always something to distract us. There's always something that might be even financially beneficial. But you really have to balance that. You know, of course, pay your bills. You know, if you got to get a job to pay your bills, do what you got to do. But is this serving my higher purpose? Is this what I'm here to do? So for me, that's an easy question that helps me get right back in alignment. Now, if I'm really stuck, like I have two things that feel like they could both be it, and I just can't make my mind up, I will get coached on it. I'll ask someone I trust and love to coach me, or I'll hire a coach, and I'll say, hey, this is what I'm stuck on, and I don't know what to do, and I apparently need some support here. Would you help me get clarity around which route is the best for me? And I have a lot of coach friends, so it's kind of easy for me. I can just call my best friend and ask him, and he'll facilitate space for me. But most of the time, if you just really check in with yourself, your heart will sing to something more than it will another. And remember, when you split your attention, your energy, and your focus, it is not, if it's 100 points of energy or focus, 50-50. It's 40-40. There's something lost every time you transition to a new task, when you transition your mind to think about a different subject. When you go from talking to this group about women's empowerment and this other group. Now, this group, these are so closely intertwined, you could probably get away with it because they're very similar. Now, if you had said, I had South African nurses and financial freedom, and then people eating right so they can lose weight, those are very different. And I'd say that you'd probably lose a lot switching between the two. With those two, just dance. Dance with both. One of them will come out to you very obviously. And until you have that moment, don't force it, don't pressure it, don't make anything wrong. Just listen. You know, a good dance partner will show you they're a good dance partner. One of these groups will be a good dance partner. The other one's going to step on your toes. So just keep dancing until you figure it out. You'll feel it. You know, when your toes hurt, just stop doing that one. Oh, cool. Voice dialogue. I don't think I've heard that before. Interesting. Yep. Parts work comes back from the 80s. Parts work's been around for a long time. I'm not sure when it originated. I have no idea, actually. But it is, there's a reason it's still around. And frankly, I've tried a lot of things. I've tried basically everything shy of the woo-woo-est of the woo stuff, because I'm more of a logical therapy kind of guy. Practical things, you know, I've tried cognitive behavioral therapy. I've tried remolding people's behavioral patterns through accountability groups, masterminds. I've tried small group coaching, little group coaching, big group coaching. I've tried everything from journaling exercises to having everything scripted for every session to complete free flow sessions. And out of every tool set I've tried with Eben and other teachers, parts work is probably one of the most potent ones I have found. It just gets the job done. It's a good Swiss Army knife too, because it works for pretty much most stuck situations. So the reason I say check it out is because it will probably benefit you in a huge way. Now, if that felt very weird to you while you're watching me do that and you're like, I don't know what's going on, I don't enjoy this, you know, there's nothing that works for everybody other than breathing air. So find what works for you and do it. Annie often demos parts integration with two hands outstretched, each holding a 3-inch version of your client, which she has them name. How do you see this process you just showed us as similar or different or used differently? Basically the exact same process. The only difference is she's doing an integration technique. Now, if I had a full hour, I probably would have done something like that. The idea is that you're having the person visualize either in their hands or in their mind. For me, it's the hug. You know, that's the together. We're one. Because you're literally hugging yourself. With Annie, she'll have one person in each hand, or one each part, excuse me. They'll merge, and then she'll put them on her chest. That's specific to NLP. Now, I have not specifically gone to like an NLP certification course. Probably will someday, but haven't done it yet. So for me, I've seen other people do that, but the way I have learned it is the way it works for me. I would do a parts work with myself, and then I would just hug myself. Try it right now, everybody. Just try it. Close your eyes for a moment. And just hold yourself. You can move your arms if you want to, if you're a hugger slash rubber. And in your mind, imagine the little kid version of you. Little boy, little girl, little other, whichever pronoun you identify with. Whatever that is, see that. And now, in your mind, while still seeing that little kid, see adult you walk into whatever room or space the little version of you is in. And see them hug each other. Literally visualize that happening as if it was real while hugging yourself in reality. And feel it. Whatever that feels like. And when you're ready, gently open your eyes. Now, even though we didn't just do parts work together or anything like that, who feels even a tiny, teensy little bit better than they did before? Anybody at all? You can be honest. It's okay if you didn't. Good chunk, about half of us or so. So imagine now if you just spent half an hour to an hour discussing these two parts and they're alive and they're real and you were tuned into them, how different that would feel. How much more powerful that might feel. So if even just hugging yourself for a moment can do that, it's about 10x, 100x. It's exponential the more time you spend in each part because they become more and more real to you. And you might find, like Mona's saying here, personally, the practice feels intrusive to one's trust, vulnerability, and might only be done well into having established a relatively empowered client relationship. You're going to have to experiment as you would with any tool. The first time you pick up a hammer, you might have missed that nail. And if you did 100 nails, you probably missed quite a few times. You're going to have to practice and see what works for you. Now, to be honest with you, in the first session where I've just met someone who I've never met before, I've done parts work and seen them have life-changing breakthroughs. So for me, it's no holds, no bar. I am here to serve. I am a conduit. I am not the person making this happen. I'm simply the thing in between you and your higher self. And I'm there to help you bridge the gap. So I'm not going to hold off on things if I think it's actually going to help. Now, that said, after doing this for, you know, hundreds of clients or however many, I can feel it. You know, it feels right, or it kind of feels, that's not a good idea. And I trust that gut feeling. For Mona, there might not be that good feeling yet. Until you have two or three sessions in. It's going to be different for everyone. Okay, Matthias saying, would you share it on your social media? I'm in a different stage than someone might be if they were starting up their business. But there's some similarities. And one of the similarities that I would challenge everyone right now to take on is that whenever you're doing something in a public space, your next level client is out there. They're listening, they're watching, they're feeling, and they're waiting. And when you become in their realm of awareness, they're listening, they're watching, they're feeling, and they're waiting. So as I come into their awareness, I need to keep in mind that I am a conscious role model. So whatever I'm sharing with the world will impact how my next level client perceives me or sees me. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to be fake. It means I'm going to be a conscious role model. I'm choosing how I show up. It's not an accident. I'm trying my best not to be reactive. I'm still going to be reactive. I'm a human being, of course. And I'm going to make conscious decisions to try and show up in a way that would inspire that next level client to talk to me or to engage with me. Or if they saw me again, they might be like, who is this guy? I want to get to know him. So when you talk about putting things on social media, I'm a big fan of right things for the right place. If I know my next level client's probably in my social media somewhere, then I'm going to present myself in a way that would inspire trust, inspire belief in them, would show credibility and trust. I'm not going to behave in a way that repels them or pushes them away. And frankly, very few things, such as I'm dealing with a struggle and I need the internet to help me with it. When you post those kind of things on Facebook, very rarely will you actually get the support you need. You know, you don't have the emotional impact of actually seeing someone's eyeballs looking into yours or hearing their actual voice on a phone. It's gone. There's no tonality. There's just words, text through the ether, the internet to you. And often things get misconstrued, misunderstood. This happens every day, all the time. If you don't believe me, check your own text threads. And how often did someone misunderstand what you said? So for me personally, the only time I'm going to ask something like that is if I'm just data gathering, if I'm actually curious what my friends are like. So I'll say things like, hey, I'm struggling picking a good carrier for insurance. Who do you use? That's kind of appropriate, right? That makes sense. I just need data. What I would probably not post is, hey, I have this inner struggle between quitting my job or, you know, staying. And, you know, here's the things I'm thinking. Mostly because now I've invited in so many different things that I cannot control that it's going to affect me energetically and emotionally. And if they're my friends, it's going to be really hard to tune out the ones that aren't helpful, that I don't want, and tune into the ones that are. So again, I would specifically reach out to people who I love and trust me and love me, who have my highest value in life. They want me to be my best version of me in mind when they talk to me. And I have not seen that done well in social media. So I'd be very careful what wounds you reveal and what vulnerability you put on social media, unless, of course, you're at a state, like I said earlier, where you've mostly resolved it. So I might share something like, hey, I had this struggle, you know, a month ago, and this is what I did about it. What I would not say is, I have this struggle, I need help right now. And if you really tune into when you're doing that, what you'll probably find when you're saying things like, I'm hurting right now on social media, you're probably less looking for actual support in a solution, and you're probably more looking for validation or love or attention. And for me, attention seeking is something that I don't want to get too wrapped up in. I don't want to spend a lot of time with that. And you can see evidence of this on your social media. You know, how many people have seen that, right? Where you see someone who's obviously looking for attention. So I'm trying to ask myself before I hit submit or post or whatever the button is, what does this communicate to my next level client? So that's a good filter for me on, is this appropriate for social media? Is this appropriate even for this group of people? Maybe it's a group outside of social media, like a chess club or something. At a chess club, I'm probably not going to talk about the deeper innermost workings of my mind with everyone, but I'll probably make a friend or two in there and talk to them. And just so you know, everyone, we went 5 minutes over. I'm probably going to go about 10 more minutes here. So if you got to hop off, do your thing. There's no pressure to stay. This is just sprinkles on top of the cake. Aren't the emotions more real when I'm in the process, not when I'm done? Emotions are real, period. Now, you might feel them more intensely when you're in the midst of the process than when you're thinking about it. That's for sure. when I'm in a process, I can be between 5 and 10 pretty easily on a 10 scale. When I'm thinking about it, it's probably more like a 1 to 5. I'm not really feeling it as intensely. Both can be useful. You know, you can contemplate, why did I feel that? What's it showing me? What's the purpose of this emotion? What's the lesson here? What am I not getting, or what am I getting? But when I'm in it, the work is simply to feel. You know, what am I feeling? Where do I feel that? Where is it in my body? What's it feel like? Not tune it out, not push it away, unless, of course, that's appropriate. When I'm at work, I probably should work. I don't want to break down crying in front of my boss when, you know, I'm needing to get some things done. But when I have a moment, I might go to my car or go home and allow it to pour out. So I don't know about real. I think emotions are real unless we're pretending. The things that aren't really real emotions are things like when someone says, I'm sore or I'm tired. These are physical descriptors. They're not really emotions. But even when you're thinking about emotion and something comes up, that's real, which is also another reason why revisiting things like trying to stay angry, you know, if you actually feel anger, you'll notice that it's hard to stay angry. The only way to stay angry is to keep revisiting it in your mind because you're stoking the fire, keeping it alive. Still real anger. It's also an anger that might have been preventable. It may not actually be beneficial to keep doing that. Great. Teresa said, practicing Park's work on myself gave me a financial breakthrough in my existing non-coaching business. Excellent. Great. All right, one more and we'll wrap up. Who's a good teacher at Park's work that I can look up? Someone you can recommend? I don't have a person in particular that I could recommend. I've learned Park's work from a dozen plus different practitioners. I think the best thing you can do is hire a therapist who's got good reviews, who does Park's work. It'll probably say internal family system, something like that. And when you do it, go through it first experientially. I know what it feels like to go through the process. Then see if you can reflect on it, you know, kind of the meta level. Okay, what did I think was happening there? When the practitioner asked me this, what were they doing? You know, think about it, journal about it, ask questions. Or you might even pay your therapist to have an entire session where you just ask them questions about it. Tell me what you were doing. I want to learn. This is important to me. And if you have a therapist, you might ask the therapist up front, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to learn about Park's work. I want to have it done to me. I want to ask you a bunch of questions about it. But first, I got to know you're cool with this. Because some therapists, for whatever reason, may not want to do that. So check in with them first. Go through the process, you know, go for 90 days, you know, actually have something real to bring to them and feel the breakthrough. Once you've had a breakthrough using a process, it is incredibly easier to do it. In fact, this is why in our coaching gyms, in Virtual Coach, if you sign up for that or you're in it right now, that's exactly what we're doing. You have to do the process to get the process. You have to experience it and have some kind of shift in your life before it really makes sense. Most coaching programs do something like this. So that's what I would personally recommend, because I didn't believe in Park's work until it happened to me. And then I had such a huge breakthrough in front of like 60, 70 people. I was crying my eyes out. I couldn't believe how powerful it was. My whole life got disrupted in that moment. And I took a different turn after that. That kind of experience, I think, is the best way to learn it. Then after that, you can take a course. You can buy a book. You can just practice with maybe a practice client or two or 5 or 10. And build up your confidence until you feel ready to do it with paying clients. This is probably true of any advanced skill set. Go through it, learn about it from the person that you learned from or that did it with you. Practice it. Don't go straight to paying clients unless you really somehow feel confident. But build your confidence up first. Let the practice people know, hey, I'm just learning. You know, this is a new thing. I'm trying to understand it. And then go through an actual deep dive education. That's been my formula for success in pretty much every coaching tool set. I've done that multiple times. So I think it works. It might work differently for you. So, you know, listen to yourself. Hope that was helpful, everybody. And we will see you in class next week. See everybody. Have a great day. Bye-bye.